All right. Welcome, everybody, to Do Yourself Promotion. Thank you all for coming. My name is Anandita, and I'll be your moderator this afternoon. Before we dive in, I just wanted to give you a quick note on what the format will be. We're going to start with three quick lightning talks. So each panelist is going to give a short talk about their background, their experience as a do-it-yourself promoter. After that, we're going to have a moderated discussion. If you have any questions, and I've already seen that a couple of questions are popping up on the hashtag, please tweet it to hashtag DIY promo, and I'll work it into the conversation. All right, and now just to dive into some brief introductions, Jeff Potter will speak first, and he is the author of Cooking for Geeks, which is a book on food science that was published by O'Reilly. His promotional efforts resulted in coverage across national print media, and he even landed on the Today Show. Laura Fitton, who will speak second, is also known as Pistachio, the queen of Twitter. She co-wrote Twitter for Dummies and founded 140, which is a startup that focused on social media for business. And her startup was acquired by HubSpot within the past year. And finally, Josh Glenn, who is an author, editor, and semiotician. He has published and promoted several books that have been reviewed in places like the New York Times. His culture blog, High Lowbrow, was one of Time Magazine's top blogs of 2010. All right, and now we're just going to dive straight in with Jeff Potter.
Whoa, and I suddenly realize that my presenter notes aren't showing on my screen here. That's awkward.
I didn't use any sticky notes.
Can you like stall for 30 seconds?
I can stall.
Thanks.
Jeff Potter like stormed into my consciousness the following way. We were both at a food camp. These are these crazy O'Reilly, like, let's sleep in an office for 3 days and get to know each other kinds of things.
Come on,
and the
Jeff,
man
get
brought
to
out
it.
A KitchenAid, a bottle of Bailey's, and I don't know the scientific technical term, carafe of liquid nitrogen.
Doer.
And 35 seconds later, we were eating the best gelato to this date I've still had. So he is every bit a cooking geek. And that was before you got the book. I think actually that stunt got him the book contract.
Yeah, it was Foo.
Really? Oh, there it goes. Maybe.
Are you all set?
No.
No, you're not on the screen anymore.
This is not how you're supposed to start a panel.
Jeff Potter also has a table in his townhouse that cannot be removed. It weighs, I think, over 1,000 pounds.
Feels like it.
Yeah, it can't be moved. No, seriously, it's about the size of this table, and it was brought in through a skylight with a crane, and therefore he is subletting rather than selling, even though he moved to LA on us a couple years ago.
I heard a story that Jeff wanted to cook pizza at the proper temperature, which is way higher than your oven can usually go, so he had to hack into his oven's controls to break the big thing that stops your oven from going to 9,000 degrees.
Okay, another true story is apparently presenter notes do show, they just don't show when there's no notes in that slide.
I know that last one's a true story because I was looking at the infrared thing reading 930 degrees in his oven in that same case.
So I'm going to start now.
So you're going to learn a lot from this.
Thank you. She's delightful. I'm going to give you four secrets today about do-it-yourself promo. These are what worked for me when promoting my book, and they're all related to working with traditional journalists and bloggers. My publisher is awesome. It's O'Reilly. And they're the best in the tech world, but they're kind of unheard of outside of it. So I ended up doing a lot of PR stuff to get my book noticed in the food world, and I had to get creative. So here's an example of what I mean by getting creative. I snagged a JetBlue all-you-can-fly pass, put up a blog post saying, if JetBlue flies to your city and you buy a box of books, I'll come and give a talk. And by selling a box of books with my author discount, I was able to cover my travel costs. When you're promoting your own project, get creative. It's okay, no one's going to tell you go, so go. Here's the first of my four secrets. Have a clear message. Okay, maybe not so much of a secret, but you can't sell a project if people can't understand it. Just ask the guys who tried to do New Coke. If you can't explain a movie in a poster, how is anyone going to know if they want to watch it? If you can't explain a book with two bullet points, how will the media be able to cover it? So as homework, try making a poster for your movie or doing the dust jacket for your book. So for example, in my case, anyone can be a geek. Cooking for Geeks is for anyone who wants to do more than just follow a recipe. The book gives readers enough science background and enough science background such that they can go into the kitchen with a scientific attitude. That's not particularly elegant, but it's clear. The secret to coming up with a clear message is this. Always answer the WIFM question. What's in it for me? I know it sounds cynical, but it's true. I was pitching a TV exec an idea for a show, going on and on about this co-host I'd found, how she was perfect. And you know what he asked? The one question? What'd she look like? This guy was asking a withering question. TV shows survive or die on having a clear message, and looks matter. If you're not sure if your message is clear, test it. What do you do if you're not an expert in a field, and you want to make sure your message is clear? You test it. So take the teaser video I made for my book. I'm not a TV pro, so I don't have good gut instincts in video. I made a bunch of videos, posted them online, and got a bunch of people to score them. And I tested them. This just in, fun is important when you're trying to come up with something that's good. Secret number two, understand how journalists work. You know, they're people too. They work just like you and me, only they're bombarded by people trying to be their new best friend. Plus, they get paid shit, and that was back when they actually got paid. So if you're going to be pitching your product to a journalist or a blogger, keep it short, helpful, and remember that with them thing. So don't ever do this. Someone sent me an email asking for, well, their message wasn't very clear. And look at that scroll bar. I mean, this thing went on for 2,600 words. They eventually asked their question, and it was one of these yes-no questions, which in this case, the answer was no. And there's really no way. I kind of feel shitty replying back saying no. So you know what I did? I just didn't reply. There's no polite way in this case. If they had instead sent me a short email with an open question, something like this, I'd love to help. Journalists get tons of email, so keep it short and relevant and with them. If you're trying to find journalists to pitch, buy a bunch of magazines that are related to your area and look at who wrote what articles, and then go and Google their names. And don't blast out tons of emails, but send short messages like, hey, I saw your article on TARDIS technology and I have a do-it-yourself version that I think your readers would really love. You know, hopefully you'll get a response if you keep it short and something that's related to them. So with do-it-yourself promotion, realize that journalists are out there looking for you as I say this. They're constantly looking for interesting stories. So go to places like South By. And it's a food chain. The local papers are looking for local stories. And where do the national papers get their stories? They get them from local stories. And the national TV shows, they get them from the national papers. It's literally someone's job at places like the Today Show to go through USA Today and circle every story that might make for a good TV segment. So what can you do to get that initial coverage? Personal connections are gold. Start with friends of friends and local beat reporters. Beyond that, honestly, this is where good PR pros really earn their keep. They already have those personal connections. And this is where you can get really smart. If your project is something where this lines up for and it makes sense, you can hire somebody to handle the one hardest thing. So in my case, I had no personal connections. Wow. I think we should
freaking
try to like...
White House.
Come on. Let's like... Ah, that was awesome. Thanks. So in my case, with the book, I needed, you know, there was one...
And you have to know, we're half the size of that room.
You're down!
Let's see if they come back for the count. So I hired somebody, in my case, specifically to deal with one specific thing. Regional newspaper food sections. And it was totally worth it. This is one area where I didn't have personal connections and trying to get, you know, all those connections would just be impossible. So my third secret, produce it yourself. Do any and all grunt work that you can so that a journalist or a blogger can cover your story easily. This isn't hard. At a bare minimum, have those two bullet points with your clear message, a bio and photos ready to go and easy to find. Especially photos. If you give newspapers photos, they will love you. It is so easy to do, and I'm shocked at how many people don't do this. So, true story. My book has interviews with a bunch of famous food people. One of them didn't have the rights to his own headshot. I had to chase down some random photographer in San Francisco to get a permission release. This is crazy. So, if you're trying to promote something, get friends to take a bunch of photos and post them on a page. Include both low-res images for bloggers and high-res images for print use. Another example of producing it yourself. USA Today was writing a story on my book, and they couldn't find a stock photo they wanted to use that's kind of food science-y. So they called me up and asked if they could send out a photographer to take my headshot. Well, of course. I mean, this is something they're going to run like in black and white on the inside, you know, not a big deal, just a little photo of me next to the article. So I got some dry ice, some beakers, and pretend to, you know, make s'mores with a blowtorch. And guess what happened? Yeah, seriously, above the fold. Full width. This does not happen. Why me? Because I produced it myself. Most people don't understand how to produce things, and USA Today does not have the budget to do this kind of photo. You have to take the initiative. Here's my fourth and last secret. Be easy to reach. This means two things. Make sure someone can easily figure out how to send you a message, and make sure when someone sends you a message that you respond quickly. This is also why that with them thing and keep your email short are so important. Otherwise, quick responses aren't possible. So being easy to reach looks something like this. Pick a name that can score number one spot in Google when someone searches for it. Now, maybe that won't happen at first, but at least make sure that that name isn't in active use by anybody else. And admittedly, coming up with a good name is really, really hard. Then on your homepage, have a very clear press and media section. It doesn't have to be jumping out, but in this case, you know, it's reasonably clear. Then on your press and media page, make it super easy to reach you. List your email and phone number right up top. If you're worried about privacy, set up an email forward and use a Google Voice number. Also, include photos in any other media that you've produced yourself, along with a permission release. And finally, make sure that your message is clear by giving two or three bullet points that describe your project. So the secret and surprise of DIY promotion isn't that it's hard, it's that it's easy. You just have to do the work and follow through.
All right.
Should we yell at the next salon one more time? Thank you, guys. I owe you one. So, true story, it's almost 5 years ago now, because it was March 2007 when Twitter was blowing up here at, what's this conference? South By. I looked at my then husband and said, all right, fine, Web 2.0. Where do I upgrade the browser so that when I go to YouTube, I can see Web 2.0? He's like, yeah, no, that's not how it works.
Oh! Yay.
That's it, Barack. I'm not voting for you. Kidding. Anyway, so that spring, I was literally like this homebound mom in Boston. I had, I'm skipping ahead. Here's a little agenda. People like to have agendas. Here's what we're going to talk about. What the hell do you do going around calling yourself pistachio? What is inbound marketing? And how do I, in this case, I being you, that's the WIFM, do it? So pistachio, what the hell, right? So like I said, I got ahead of myself. True story. And here I am 5 years later from homebound mom to inbound marketing evangelist. I got the chance in between to run a VC-funded company as the CEO with absolutely no qualifications to do so. That was fun. I got to write a book and hand it to PB Herman. That was fun. I'll be signing those books right after this. And now I run around wearing this like awesome orange sprocket. And so I was accused by Shel Israel, and this was true, the author of Naked Conversations, for Twittering my way out of kind of a bad situation. And one tip I'm going to start right with is if you want to evangelize something, convince an evangelist first and let them do all the work for you. I randomly emailed Guy Kawasaki, who didn't know me from Job, nobody did, with a blog post called Ode to Twitter and said, you're totally wrong that Twitter is a stupid waste of time. And he turned into the biggest Twitter spammer ever once he believed me. And I love him dearly, and I tell him that to my face. So just to give you some sense, I'm being silly here, but Twitter really reached in and pulled me out of this, like, whoa, where I was stuck, and threw me up into the air, and stuff started happening that was really magic. And I don't know how to tell you how to do that. So I'm going to tell you what I can about it, and hopefully something in it will resonate with you, okay? So it was crazy. One day someone DM'd me and said, how do you know Seth Godin? I said, I don't. They're like, no, you're in his book. A guy asked me to go speak at Harvard Business School April 2009 and tell them that Twitter was a serious business tool. Because starting in August 2007, I started going like, hey, world, Twitter's a serious business tool. It's going to be really big. It's going to change celebrities' lives. It's going to change the economy. People thought I was knocking futs even more than I am now, right? I was really afraid of Rotten Tomatoes, but it worked out okay. Luckily, I pinned my hopes on this and not Plurk, because it was May 2008 when Plurk was taking over from Twitter that I made all these bets. I did end up getting to be a CEO. I did end up at the second fastest growing software company where I am now. And there's been ridiculous amounts of hype. By the way, takeaway, never believe your own hype. It's nice that people project stuff on me. I'm grateful for it, but I don't for a minute believe it. So how'd that all happen? Well, there's something called inbound marketing. And I'll put it very short. I tweeted this week when someone was saying, what's the best way to market at South by Southwest? I said, it's the best way to market anywhere. Show up and make yourself useful. I can stop now. That's really it. So the key to inbound marketing is your marketing shouldn't be like this, because marketing for a long time now has kind of left people feeling like this. This is how your marketing should make people feel. You ready? 3, 2, 1. Give people shit they want. You know? And I'm not saying I was going out there and trying to be a people pleaser and kiss everybody's butt. I was trying to make whatever I said or whatever I did more entertaining to the person receiving it than necessarily it was about me. So there's 3 steps to inbound marketing. There's the getting yourself found. You all have heard content marketing, right? Get lots of good content out there. But don't just leave them once they find you. Help them convert and analyze and measure the heck about what you're doing. This is a very complicated slide. It's hard to absorb it all. Just think of the columns. Get yourself found, whether that's all the different promos you can do, all the different social media you can produce. Think about how to convert. That's pulling people a little closer down your funnel to when they're going to be ready for buying the awesome that you are. And measure what you're doing so that you can experiment with different things and see what really makes a difference for you. Because you can't do all of it at once, and you're going to burn yourself out. I placed a huge bet on Twitter because I was sure it was going to be something fun, but I could have been wrong. I didn't try and do Facebook and MySpace and all those other things at once. I just stuck to something that was really working for me that I really believed in. Marketing has changed forever, a little Hugh McLeod thing that we had commissioned, because media has changed forever. And because it's changed, this is what's possible. This is Jeff putting that blowtorch into USA Today. I encourage people to think very openly about social and Twitter. It's not what you had for lunch. It's a global sensing and signaling network. And it's like all these human beings commenting on what's remarkable around them. And what that means is that suddenly the influencer model, the one-to-many model, it doesn't matter anymore. Now it's the message that's the influencer. This photo, which I guarantee you have all seen before, this guy was an internationally published photojournalist before he even got off the freaking ferry. How many followers did he have on Twitter? Anyone? 29. So stop coming up to me and saying, how do I get more followers? I got to promote my stuff. And just do something amazing. You know, like, he didn't need to get 30 followers to pull this off. Now, of course, you're not necessarily going to be in that time and place. But what is the functional equivalent of a piece of content that amazing that relates to the problem you're solving? If you do that, you don't need any of our tips. So any to many. You never know where that next big thing is going to come from. And I personally hope it's going to come from one of you about the stuff you're doing. Influence in the past with the one-to-many had to be all about jumping on the soapbox and screaming louder than the USCTO, I won't make you do it again. Now it's about providing attention and value to others. You get your first customer, you get your first person who thinks your product is great, shine the spotlight on them. That's so much more meaningful than talking about your product. Whatever you do and wherever you publish it, turn it inside out. Make it about the reader. It is not about you. Example of this, you write a great blog post, and let's stick to Twitter, because obviously that's the only thing I know, right? You write a great blog post, you want to tweet it. You can go title, link, and that's a tweet, and okay. Or, let's say I was talking to a guy this morning who writes about Southern culture for gentlemen. I said, okay, you did a great blog post about how to make sweet tea the right way to charm your date. So you could do title, how to make sweet tea the right way and charm your date, link. Or you can say, are you sure you've never made sweet tea bitter and turned off your date? Right? It's about the reader. It's the same damn article, but you make it about the reader. So in case you didn't get it from the cute little girl, make marketing people love. In case you're wondering who the foremost expert on social media and Twitter is, I'm going to go with Ben Franklin. If you're doing that, and this is in the takeaways handout. Do they have the takeaways handout? Do we do
that?
Okay, good. Yes. Make yourself useful. There's your 2-word guide to DIY self-promotion. You want a 4-word guide? You want more detail? All right. Listen, learn, care, and serve. These are in order, but they're also cyclical. Keep doing it. Anybody here ever worked a room at a cocktail party? Right? So you run up to that first group of interesting looking people and you stick out your hand and you start yelling about your product, right? Okay, don't do that on social media either. Because Jesus Christ, that's what everybody does. No, stand next to a cool looking group and listen to them for a while and hear what they're talking about and go, yeah, they're probably not my right people, and move on to the next group. And then when you hear that, oh, these are my right people, and hopefully you're proactively searching with your listening tools, but when you find your right people, then make yourself useful to them. Example, I'm going to give you both an example of how HubSpot does this in our marketing and give you a tool you can go use to make your marketing better. We believe in giving away something of value first, so we created something called Marketing Grader. Marketing.grader.com. Run your website through it right now, totally free. You don't even have to freaking give us an email address. We're not looking for leads from you. We're just trying to help you. So we think if we're useful first, you'll come back. It's going to tell you for like 100 different points of your marketing, your Facebook, your social, what you're doing well and what else you can think about doing. So that's the most like concrete takeaway I could give you for actionable custom advice for your situation. Run it through Marketing Grader. See how you're doing, and for God's sake, show up and make yourself useful. Think about making marketing materials that people would pay you to receive. All right.
Thank you. Ding-a-ling-a-ling, ding-ding-ding-ding. All right. So in the 90s, I used to publish a zine journal called Hermonaut. On the side while I worked. I've had jobs all ever since then, but on the side, on the weekends, on the evenings, I do my DIY projects. A high-lowbrow iPhone app called Kerpunch. I'm doing some reissuing some classic science fiction novels this year, a lot of kinds of different things. And these are my secrets that I learned accidentally in 1999. While visiting New York one day, walking down the street exactly like this, I was attacked by ninjas. No, I was visiting New York. I was, at the time I was publishing, I just left tripod.com where I'd been the co-producer, I should say, of this primitive early social networking site. And I had cashed in all my stock options immediately as soon as I left. And so I could live for a couple of years. I was publishing my magazine, Hermonaut. I was doing a little bit of freelance writing for Feed. And I had a baby, so I was pretty busy. I was not going to New York to try to sell anything. But I had a lot of friends who were working at magazines, websites, blogs. So while I was there, I thought I would look them up and visit them in their office and say hi. So I went to these different offices, and every place the same exact thing happened to me, this very weird phenomenon where I would sit down with my friends and start chatting, making small talk. They would invite some of their other editorial colleagues over, would all be talking to each other. And after a few minutes, in every place that I went, my friend and the other editors would start saying things, and I was not a famous, well-known, or even very talented writer. So this is not because I was like Norman Mailer walking in there. I was just a guy. They started saying, well, so Josh, do you have something that you'd wanted to do for us? Oh, no, nothing. Well, you know, and then I would make some more small talk, and then they would start to say, do you want to pitch us a column idea maybe for the magazine? Do you want to, maybe you could, you know, write regularly for the web? No, thanks. Do you have like a book proposal you want to send to us? Like maybe you should send it to us, you know, within the next couple of weeks. No, I don't have any ideas for a book. And I realized pretty quickly that what was happening was that these editors get approached by freelance writers all the time, and they put up these invisible shields against, you know, this attack coming from these freelance writers who are importuning them because they want something. And the thing about a shield is that unless there's some impetus coming from your attacker, that shield gets kind of heavy. And after a while, you start to topple forward under the weight of your own defenses. So I was by accident, making all these editors topple forward and abase themselves before me and offer me, you know, the world when I didn't want anything. So I realized that I had discovered a form of jujitsu in the realm of schmoozing. But here's the thing about schmoozitsu, you can't fake it. You can't pretend that you don't want something. You have to actually not want something. But of course, it's a little bit insane and paradoxical. So what I'm actually talking about here is engaged detachment, as they would say in Eastern philosophy. Engaged detachment is like detachment. It's like not wanting anything, but it has a certain amount of passion mixed in. It's a very tension-filled, negative, dialectical, existential place to be. An easy way to describe that is David Carradine versus Bruce Lee. David Carradine on Kung Fu, no emotions. You know, he's always stone-faced. I do not want to kick your ass, but I'm going to do that now. Whereas Bruce Lee, also kicking your ass, also detached, but with passion, emotion. And so who do you want to be, David Carradine or Bruce Lee? Right. We know the answer to that. Jiu-Jitsu has five attitudes, just like Jiu-Jitsu. The first is earth. And one of the important principles here is to remain centered. And in branding terms, in existential terms, it just means knowing who you are, knowing what you stand for, and sticking to that. As Andy mentioned, I'm a semiotician who works with who does a lot of brand analysis. So I'm just constantly basically telling clients this all the time. Striking a balance, that means being neither too aggressive nor too passive. So it's that tension-filled state of engaged attachment. Welcoming a challenge. So to quote from another religious tradition, in Ecclesiastes, it says to cast your bread upon the waters, which is a weird thing to say, but what that means is be hospitable even though there's no chance you're going to get hospitality back from that action. Just do it anyway. And finally, what Krishna says to Arjuna on the battlefield in the Bhagavad Gita, remain detached from the fruits of your actions. So don't cease acting, but remain detached from the fruits of your actions. The second attitude is water. When you are promoting a DIY project, and I've done a lot of them now, that DIY project, and I assume a lot of you are in the room because you do things, passionate, projects of your own that are not kind of big, huge money makers necessarily, but they're something that you feel very passionately about. It becomes very tied up with your own personality and your own sense of who you are and yourself. So by putting it out there and promoting it, it's a very vulnerable place to be in, because when you get rejected by those journalists or bloggers or Twitter readers, whoever it is that you're trying to reach, and by rejected I mean they're just not responding, they're not writing stories about you or passing on the word, that can feel like an attack. So when I talk about attacks and opponents in this talk, that's what I'm talking about, not actual attacks, not actual opponents. So you still want to make yourself vulnerable. You want to do it anyway. What do you do when you're attacked? You disperse negative energy. So just like water, when someone punches water, you don't take it, you don't let it kill you. You move on. You stay nimble. Be persistent. Water, as we know from the Tao Te Ching, flows in the places that men reject. It gets through every crevice and crack, and it eventually gets through every obstacle. So just don't stop. Keep doing it. This, by the way, is a scene from Force 10 from Navarone, in case anyone didn't recognize it. And get inside their defenses. The final principle of the water attitude is, and this is something that we're hearing here before from Jeff especially, know how people think. If you're trying to get the word out on Twitter, then how do Twitter people think? How do they use Twitter? What are they looking for? If it's a journalist, well, what are journalists looking for? How do they think? So in my case, I actually come from journalism, so I have a little bit of a leg up there. But for some of these other formats where I'm trying to get publicity, I just have to do the homework, figure out. Jump in and figure out how people think in that world. Fire, the third attitude, doing everything for its own sake. The idea here is that DIY, doing things for the reason that you're doing a DIY project is the same attitude you should have when you're promoting it. You're doing these things not because necessarily you want to get famous and rich, that would be nice, but because you love doing it, because that's what you want to do. Promote in the same way and with the same attitude. I never talk when I'm doing this myself, about in terms of promotion and publicity and marketing. I think in terms of spreading the word. I think in terms of evangelizing. That's the passion that you should bring to it. Give excessively. This is a picture of Zarathustra. And in Thus Spake Zarathustra, Nietzsche has his prophet character talk about, compare himself to the sun and admire the sun, because the sun is always overflowing with energy. The sun never takes, it only gives. And that is how I think of what I'm doing when I'm promoting the products, my projects, just giving. And finally, the last thing, part about fire, is promoting your friends. And you don't do this, again, you don't do this because you're expecting your friends to also promote your work. You're doing it because you want the world to change. You want the world to be a place in which your DIY projects and your friends' DIY projects are the norm. That's that kind of cool thing happens all the time. That's the mainstream. You don't want to be eccentric and outsider and bucking the trend. So by promoting your friends, you're doing your small part to build that world. The attitude wind, what we learn from wind is that you change directions when you need to. Keep, if one thing isn't working, you try something else. Sympathize with your opponent. This is a really interesting thing that we learned from the martial arts, from jiu-jitsu, where when you're being attacked, and in this context, what I mean by attack is being ignored by the people that you're trying to get to spread the word about your project, your reaction to that should not be hostility and feeling like they're doing you wrong and they're not being nice. You should feel sympathetic. They, they're ignorant. They don't understand how great what you're doing is. So you should feel bad for them and bring them along. It's up to you. Their failure to spread the word means more responsibility for you to get the word out. Never Stop Moving. I just like this picture. I like this movie. Engage on your own terms. So again, it's all about being slippery, resilient. Obviously, I'm telling you to think like journalists think and think like people on Twitter think. But again, you have to always be bringing yourself to it. You can't just be trying to, adopt some fake alien persona just to get people to write about you. I think that's kind of what Laura was saying, too. The fifth and final attitude, redirection. And all of the four other attitudes kind of come into this one. The first and main important idea here is that you don't actually have any opponents. You just have friends that don't know that they're your friends yet. Get your energies in sync, and by the energies, I mean your energies and your opponent's energies. So journalists, people on Twitter, whoever it is that you're trying to get to, you need to figure out what they're trying to get out of this experience, and you don't have to copy them and artificially mold yourself to what they're trying to do, but just find a way to sync up the energies. Don't lose perspective. Keep a sense of humor about it, and that goes back to this idea that, disperse the energy. If you can't, I don't know, if maybe I'm the only one who's neurotic enough to feel like a personal rejection if I'm reaching out to a journalist about one of my projects and they don't respond or they don't give me a review or whatever it is. But if in case anyone else out there is like me and feels that way, you shouldn't feel that way. You have to keep a sense of humor about it and just keep moving. And finally, work with your opponent. As Jeff was saying, journalists are looking for ideas all the time. I've been a newspaper and magazine and website journalist for many years, and it's true that they feel importuned if you're sending them blast facts and long emails and these books that they didn't ask for and things coming over the transom all day long. You do feel as a journalist a little bit attacked and assaulted and under siege, and the trick is to you don't want to add to that problem. You want them to feel like you're helping them do their job. Satisfaction guaranteed. I don't actually guarantee that this is a 100% efficient way to do promotion. I'm not as famous as these guys. But the point of Shmoozitsu is not about being efficient, because Shmoozitsu is also, as I hope has been apparent, it's a sort of a style of life as well as a style of promotion. And the DIY style of life and the Shmoozitsu style of life and the things that these guys have been talking about is it's not all about being efficient and perfect and get everything right. It's about doing what feels good, and this feels good to me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Okay, now we're going to move over to the Q&A side of things. And as I mentioned, if you have questions, there have been a couple on the hashtag DIY promo. Feel free to keep tweeting questions as we're discussing. The first question that I have for you, and it's for all of you. Basically, all of you have talked about relationship building and about how you're trying to reach out to people and build relationships both with the customer, the user, and with the media. This is partially about finding the right community. So how do you scale, and do you always scale?
Laura, go first.
Thank you for your brilliance.
The catastrophe. You don't. There's only you. And Right. Don't get yourself into situations where you're trying to do more than you can sustain. People are always like, how many times per day should I tweet? How many times per week should I blog? And I'm like, whatever you can handle and sustain. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people get, oh yeah, I'm going to do it. It's like people who take up running for the first time and run 3 miles and then, have shin splints and never run again. True confession, and this wasn't strategic, I was so scared to start blogging when I first started blogging 5 years ago, and I don't even blog anymore because I can't keep it up. I'm too lazy. I wrote, I think, 15 blog posts in Excel in a spreadsheet before I was willing to post any of them because I wanted to have a little cushion, a little backlog. So be mindful that the things you're diving into may not scale, and that's okay, and you don't have to keep doing it just because you started. This is why the analyze step is so important. If it's not working, it's okay to stop. Don't beat yourself up. Don't shit on yourself. It's bad.
I would add that the most important thing to do is to have fun. And when it stops being fun, stop doing it.
Fun's wicked sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. And, if you're doing it to get your message out there because you've got something you really want to share with people, that's going to be fun. And when it starts becoming work, yeah, go do something else.
I agree.
All right. So one question from the audience is, what if the person who is doing this promotion is not all that creative? How do you do this? We have stumped the panel.
You don't have to be creative. You have to believe in what you're doing. Like, if it's really earnest and it's really from the soul. So let's stop and just talk about startups for a minute. I wrote a chapter for the Techstars book about startups. The book is called Do More Faster. The chapter is called Quit Your Startup. If you're doing something, if you're bringing a product into the world or an art or a creative thing that you are capable of quitting, then quit. Because there's something better that you need to figure out. So if you're worried about, am I creative enough to promote this thing I've brought into the world, that thing you've brought into the world is your baby. And maybe it was the wrong baby, and you're going to put it up for adoption and go find a new one. But once you find the right baby, you're not going to have trouble. Like, the creativity, worry about it. It's about explaining what you did and being excited about what you did. One of the reasons I'm probably had things work out for me and ended up kind of visible and shit was that I was so picked on in school that I stopped caring what anybody thought, and I just said what I thought. And I think that is probably a more useful way to get creative if you don't feel creative, is just be really earnest and don't be afraid to look douchey and like, oh my God, she's so sappy. Like, okay, fine, but the people who need the thing I'm about will find me and not disapprove.
I would add, be enthusiastic. And, you know, babies have aunts and uncles and grandparents and godparents. So if you're really enthusiastic about your project and you share that with six people, some of those people may become evangelists for you. And they may really help get the word out there. And they can be creative on your behalf.
Promotion, it can be iterative too. I mean, I'll send an email to a journalist and I'll want to send the same one to 10 other journalists, but I'll probably change it. Not necessarily trying to adapt it because one guy's in Boston and one guy's in New York, I'm going to write it differently for that, but just because I'm obsessively always rereading it and finding some way I could have said it better and done it better. And, you know, 2 days later, it's a completely different email than it was when I started it the other day, but that's fine. It's, you know, there's absolutely no reason you have to have the same exact message going out to everybody.
Great. Another question. So this one from Yelena, which is, what percent of your time do you spend on promotion? And I'm going to add to that, how do you balance promotion with creating your next thing or working on your actual project?
Oh, can I go first?
Please.
Sure.
No.
Yes.
When I was living in Minneapolis in the 90s, I was friends with a guy who made fonts, a fontographer named Chank Diesel. And one day he pulled up outside a cafe where I was sitting in his car, and he opened up the trunk and he pulled out a box and he started handing out t-shirts to everybody, and they said fucker.com on them, and he had managed to register fucker.com. This is in the early days of the web, you could get any word that you wanted, and this was so cool, and these were great looking t-shirts, and I was so excited, and I said, what's this website you're making? He's like, I don't know yet. And I was like, that was a deep insight to that's when the promotion has to start. You don't even, before you even know what you're doing, start promoting it.
How do you follow up with that? I would say four words for creativity to memorize: dedicated time and dedicated space. Okay, if you count the and, that's five. And what I mean by that is, when it comes to the act of creating content, you really need to have a dedicated time that you set aside where you're not going to allow Twitter and Facebook and all the other interruptions to intrude. And also you need to create a dedicated space where you're going to go and do whatever that creative act is, whether it's music or writing or, you know, whatever. The promotional stuff beyond all of that and how it fits into your life and your schedule is kind of, again, what I said earlier. I would say have fun and go and do the things that excite you. And if you're having fun and it's exciting you, well then, you know, it'll work. It certainly won't work if you're not having fun.
I'm also fairly interstitial and non-directive about it. I play to my ADD strengths, where maybe I'll work for 45 minutes and then I'll hop on Twitter for 5, 10, 15 minutes and just catch up with people, and then I'll go off and do something else. And one of the best PR opportunities that ever fell into my lap, and I have to admit I didn't take advantage of it, but when I was trying to promote a Twitter app store to the world, I was following a few key tech journalists, and one of the key tech journalists tweeted that she had just installed Uber Twitter, which at the time had this sadistically invasive default setting on location, where the moment you tweeted with it for the first time, it gave away your GPS coordinates and posted them on your Twitter page. And so I'm a single mom. I'm in the crib with my kid, and I'm ashamed to admit I was on my BlackBerry reading tweets, because she was crying and she couldn't fall asleep. It was like 10:30 at night, and all she needed was for me to physically be there holding her. So I'm bored and I'm looking on Twitter, and Julia Angman from the Wall Street Journal tweets, "I just installed Uber Twitter," and I'm like, "Whoa!" And because Twitter is a gate jumper, you can tweet anybody. I just sent a tweet at Julia Angman. Check the location defaults. So if you theoretically wanted to brand yourself in the mind of a big deal tech journalist that you're an expert on Twitter apps, whoa, it just fell into my lap, right? So you can't, I know we all want to feel efficient and do it and get back to our work and have a plan and act it out. Like, sometimes it's okay to not have a plan and let some of the random overwhelm you and trust yourself, you know? Comment, be human about the work you just did, be passionate about the work you just did. Maybe that is your content. It doesn't have to be as strategic as we're making it look. And believe me, I don't think for any of us it was as strategic as we're making it look.
No, so I guess that's a follow-up question, which is, how do you prepare yourself for those serendipitous moments? Is there anything that you can do?
ADD so helps
like
a lot.
That, like ADD? Okay.
I would say do the base groundwork, the homework. You know, I tried to give really specific comments to you guys today about having photos and clear messages and, you know, just producing stuff. Have that stuff ready to go. So, I mean, if you're ever going to be pitching to TV journalists, they want to see, you know, maybe four or five different ideas of things they might, you know, be able to do as a TV segment. These are usually like, you know, little paragraph descriptions of what you're going to do. Sit down and write that. It's a one-page doc with four or five things. Even if you never give it to them, you've already written it, so you already have the ideas in your head. So when it comes up, you know, you've done that base ground homework. You're never going to be able to, you know, exactly prepare for something that's serendipitous, but if you've done a lot of kind of the groundwork and thought about it, it'll be natural.
Yeah, that's what they say about luck, is that you can pave the way for lucky things to happen to you. For example, when Time magazine named my blog, you know, the best blog of 2010, I hadn't contacted them. I hadn't, you know, I'd contacted other people trying to get them to write about us. I hadn't ever thought to contact Time because our blog is explicitly anti-middlebrow. So I assumed that Time would not like us. But you know, I'd done all the other things. We were on Twitter and we had, you know, we put out, you know, we write about, we blog about ourselves all the time and we're getting the word out. And somehow on one of those channels, you know, somebody at Time saw this and our traffic went through the roof and it stayed through the roof ever since. So. Again, it was sort of lucky because it was random. We didn't know this person. There was no connection, but it was also because we were doing all this work in the background.
And to follow up on that, I think this is more for you, Josh, and for Jeff. Is all attention good attention? So, you know, Time Magazine, as you just said, is not quite your demographic, and yet they picked it up. And then same with, you were on the Today Show. They're not exactly a geek audience. So
yeah.
Did that help, or is that something that was just attention and it just took bandwidth that you just had to deal with afterward?
It's really hard to predict what media is going to be useful and what's not. It all adds up. I was on NPR. NPR sells books. If you're ever trying to sell books, get an NPR. Today's show didn't really bump the numbers. And actually, the number two thing that moved numbers was Slashdot. I'm like, who still reads Slashdot? But a lot of people do.
Geeks.
Geeks, okay, right. Well, not, well. I don't know, is that...
Yeah.
Yeah, when I used to publish Hermonaut, which was a print journal, distribution was the worst part of publishing. As anyone here as a publisher knows, it's just it's like almost like a Dadaist, a theater of the absurd thing. It's like you send your all these valuable, you know... objects to the distributor, and then they sell them at whatever the price they want to the bookstore, and the bookstore sells it for a really price, and then they tear off the covers, and they might lose some of them, and then some money eventually trickles back to you, but it's always a pittance compared to the value of the objects that you sent out, at least at the scale that I was working. However, if you're not on those newsstands, people don't find out about you. You know, people need to see you in the newsstand. That's how you get subscribers, and that's how you get, people... journalists finding out about you and everybody finding out about you. So there's a loss leader aspect to it too. You just got to do these things and accept the good with the bad that comes back.
I will add that one of the early experiences I had was actually a local newspaper writing an article on Cooking for Geeks before I had written the two or three bullet points and put them up on my website really clearly. And that journalist just kind of, I think he opened and like read four random pages and wrote the whole thing in 15 minutes and was just very unfocused. So I think there can be bad coverage, and really the way you prevent that is have a clear message.
So if you do get bad coverage, what do you do after that? How do you handle it? And how do you, as Josh was saying, redirect it?
I would say you learn why it was bad. If it's a true legitimate criticism of your work, well, then it's legit. And you have to go and figure out, you know, how to improve, you know, based on that criticism. If, however, it's just misguided, you need to do a better job communicating what your message is so that the journalists that are going to come after that can understand. I mean, journalists have almost no time to cover a story. They've got to get in, figure out what the essence of it is, and put it out there. And if you give them a starting point that's legitimate and really, you know, helpful, that's a snowball. That's going to start the right direction as opposed to just kind of something random.
Laura, do you have anything to add to that?
I do, actually. So turn the other cheek, right? That always sounded like a very pious, difficult thing to me. Like, I'm not Jesus, I can't do that. And running a startup and kind of accidentally or intentionally getting screwed over a bunch of different times, I realized that turning the other cheek is super selfish. Now, stick with me here. And it's way easier than you think. When you don't bother to harness up all the negative response energy that is required when someone screws you over accidentally or on purpose, you save a lot of energy, and you need your energy because you are birthing a child into the world, even if you're a dude. It totally fucks with the head of the person who did it because they're all like, why is she being nice to me? And 9 times out of 10, they come back 3 weeks later and hook you up with something because they feel so guilty for what they did. And you look awesome when you have fun with a bad critic. Like, not in a mean way. Don't have fun with them in a mean way. But one of the first reviews on Amazon for Twitter for Dummies was like 0 stars, if you can do that. Probably 1 star because you probably can't do 0. Twitter is so freaking stupid. Right? So I loved that. I tweeted the heck out of that review, and people came screaming to my defense and wrote all these good reviews on Amazon because they were like, what a douchebag. I can't believe some guy just slammed her book because he doesn't like Twitter.
Yeah, rule number 0, be nice.
Yes. No matter what, it is never worth a negative reaction, and it's kind of devious to not react negatively to negative things. Believe me, it's fun.
Be nice, be nice, be nice. The first person, this article that I was talking about that was kind of unfocused, This is actually a journalist who is an ethics teacher at a university in Boston who personally posted on his own blog that he was really jealous of the book because he thought it had a good target and was going to do well, and he didn't like that. And this is like somebody who teaches journalism and knows ethics, and he's writing a kind of negative review and posting his personal blog. 3 months later, my alumni magazine hired this person to do a nice piece on me. I am so glad I never, you know, said anything, because, I mean, really, think about it. It's one of those awkward, like, you're right, be nice, always be nice.
I kind of like getting bad publicity or bad reviews. Not that I've ever had any, actually, but...
Oh!
Because...
That was a challenge to you guys,
just
by the way.
In Egypt.
It means that people, you're pressing people's buttons. People are caring passionately. Every rapper knows that you want to have your haters. So you're not doing things right if you don't have haters.
All right. Looking back... Is there anything that you wish that you knew starting out that you've learned?
All of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Just like single takeaway.
I'm going to go with the thing he said. This almost the exact thing he said about redirection arose spontaneously in my brain when I was talking to my daughter one day. She was nervous about whether people would like her. And I said, oh, honey, everybody already loves you. Everybody already loves you. The trick is just be near them long enough and nice enough for them to figure it out. And don't worry if they never figure it out. You can't own that. That's not you. I realized that my sophomore year high school chemistry teacher, who was trying to teach us about character means taking radical responsibility for everything that's you and not wasting your energy spinning on the stuff that you can't control. So I wish I knew that earlier.
A reminder, if you've got questions, tweet us at DIY Promo.
Oh, and Michael Hensley, yes, you can be too overactive on Twitter, and the key there is just measure it, and if it stops working, like if everybody unfollows you and no one ever clicks any of your links, that might be your hint. Jim Glob, God damn it, I'm waiting for someone to say I'm in love with you and not be gay, but thank you.
And Jim, see me afterward.
True story. You probably realize there's some chemistry here. We were going to start a blog about how to find the perfect 30-something man in Cambridge, because we were both looking for the perfect 30-something man in Cambridge. Two different ones, hopefully. And then the fucker moved to L.A., moved to LA without even telling me. So yeah, Jim, hook up with him. Give love back to your followers. All right, if a journalist ever covers you, tweet a link to their article and include their Twitter name in your tweet. You know, you're kind of ass-kissing, but you're also thanking them. And, you know, showing they're going to want to write about you again if you give them a positive experience like that. If someone tweets something nice about you, and hopefully I've already done this one here because some people have tweeted some great tweets and I've made an effort to retweet you so that you get some attention because I'm grateful that you said that nice thing. Now, be careful because this can get really douchey, and I bet I crossed the line a lot where it's like, you know, I did it accidentally once, so I'll give you this as an example. I had a keynote about a week or two ago. I don't even know when because I don't know where I am. And I went to hit reply to write thank you, and I hit retweet instead. And it was a really over-the-top, like, you were the best speaker at the whole conference. Don't do that. But nicely thank people for their coverage, for their attention. Shine attention on them. You know, like I said earlier, something about your customer is the best source of content about what you do. Tell the story of how they're kicking ass because they bought your art or they bought your services.
Unexpected side benefit of saying thank you to the journalists is you begin to develop a personal relationship with them, so they come back to you in the future when they need quotes or got some story they're writing for something else and want to, you know, get a third voice in there.
Yeah, and save all your emails for 10 years because everybody I've ever dealt with in the past, they're all still around 10 years later and doing something else interesting. And if you can remember that contact and reforge that contact, you know, they're still out there and they'll help you again.
The more you humanize your opponent, I mean, I think that was the underlying message of your four things. Like, they have a job to do. That article, I know why that article sucked. That person was busy.
Get 15 minutes to write it.
Right? And you can pre-chew articles. I'm amazed. Like, yeah, don't send press releases out that are really, like, self-serving. But if you can put something out into the world that's really well-written in a non-biased way about what you want the story to be, hugely frequently, if they're going to cover you, they will just lift a lot of that because you're in customer service and your client is somebody who needs to provide a lot of good content if you're working with a journalist, right? You're in customer service if you're trying to find your customer for obvious reasons. Try and really put yourself in that what's, you know, I think all three of us said some variant of the what's in it for me for your audience. Turn the message around for them, serve them. I love your whole shimizutsu thing. Oh, my God. That's so good.
I just want to say, speaking as someone who was a journalist for a long time, I never did that. Just take lift things out of people's press releases and run it in the paper. That seems to me a cruddy way of doing journalism, but people do it.
It's very, you're an very actual common. Journalist.
It's very common.
And there's a slippery line here. When I think about it, it's not that you're telling them what to write. It's that you're telling them what your message is. They're going to take it and evaluate it and do what they want with it, but they've at least heard what your message is, and that's really the key there.
So you've had different length careers at doing all this promotion and stuff. How have your promotional efforts changed over time? I mean, what you did when you were first starting out is very different from what you're doing now. So how has that grown, evolved? So you still have to actively promote, I guess, is one other question.
In the beginning, I really wasn't promoting. I was just frothing at the mouth by how cool I thought Twitter was. And I was kind of freaked out that I was suddenly getting a following. I'm like, that's kind of weird. What do I do with that? The first thing I really audaciously promoted in a, like, I want this to fucking work and I want people to pick up this story and go with it, was Charity Water. It wasn't even me. It was that I was having this, like, first Christmas alone after my divorce and, you know, love-hate relationship with having 12,000 readers on Twitter at the time. I'm like, what's the point of this? I can't do anything. And then I was like, well, what if I could get them all to give $2? We could get $25,000 together. We could build 5 wells in Africa. That would feel good to me. And it was very easy to promote that. So that's probably the first time I started intentionally promoting. So it really did change a lot over time. And I'm probably way more self-promotional now than I realize. I would love not to be. I would love to find a way to simply talk about things I love and I'm passionate about and let the chips fall where they may.
10 minutes.
Excellent. Yep. So we just had a question that I think is just very straightforward, which is, how do you get people to write about you? Can you talk a little bit about the pitching process? I think Josh, especially as a journalist, what do you look for?
Yeah, well, and this also goes back to the last question you asked. It took me a long time to get to the place where I think Laura and Jeff probably began, which is keeping it personal. When I first started publishing Hermonaut, I was working at Onion Reader magazine in those days, and so I was publishing a zine. And I went to the head of, you know, marketing for this magazine that had a circulation of 500,000 or whatever they had. and said, what should I do? And he had me make like this beautiful embossed folder with printouts of all the, we had to like make a sheet for every time we got a press mention. We had to have the banner headline and the pictures of us and the stickers and all the stuff. And we were buying mailing lists and sending it to places, and it didn't do anything. And later, when I just started emailing people with one individual to another, or just forging relationships with journalists and bloggers and other people just because I liked what they were doing, even if I didn't have anything to pitch them at that time, that has been much more successful and sustainable and rewarding, as I was saying before. Not necessarily 100% effective, but it felt good and it's worked well enough.
Great. I'd say focus on the things that matter and don't worry about all the other little things. There's this famous Steve Jobs story of him going out right before a presentation. He, I think, was walking around the lawn and got his shoes all scuffed up in, green grass, whatever. And then he went up on stage and did one of his keynotes at, Moscone Center. Like, he didn't even care about his shoes because it just didn't matter to his presentation, which I think most of us would probably be worrying about the little details. But really, at the end of the day, there are things that do matter. Focus your time there. Don't worry about the little stuff that just isn't relevant.
Terrific. And then there was another very specific question about whether there's any advice for people who are both journalists and do-it-yourself promoters. I think the question might be, how do you balance the two?
Be authentic.
So for people who are trying to promote their journalism?
I'm not sure, actually. Can whoever it was clarify that?
Every journalist should be a DIY promoter. Because, hello, journalism is under some pretty intense scrutiny right now. So I think that's a great question. I would love to hear Josh's answer to it.
Yes. If the person who asks is willing to pop up, okay, you can be shy.
Well, when I was at the Boston Globe, the last job I had there and the reason I quit because it was so stressful was I decided that I wanted to train everyone in editorial, all the editors and all the journalists how to be online, which people did not know how to do at the Boston Globe. They could barely use their email. They had every single email that ever received was still in their inbox. You couldn't see their desktop because there's so many files and things on from everything they'd ever downloaded. And I wanted to teach them how to, use the web in a way that's good with journalism. And it was impossible. That's when my hair turned gray. I looked beautiful before then. But what I realized is, what was the question? What I realized is that, journalists need to think of themselves like all of us need to think of ourselves. Like we used to say in the 90s as U-Inc. You need to think of yourself as a monad, a node in a network. You're not just person who's filing your stuff to the Boston Globe, the New York Times, letting the New York Times do the rest. You are part of a network, and you need to be making your hub bigger and bigger. So you need to be doing your own social media. You need to be getting the word out about your own stuff, for sure. So I would treat it just like if I was a journalist and trying to get the word out about my journalism, I would do it the same way I would do with any other project.
Okay, and this question actually, we got a little bit more specifics on it. So the question is, what if you have separate projects? So you are a journalist, and you're doing your own thing. And you want to promote that, but you're afraid of crossing that professional boundary.
Yes. Well, I would certainly never wrote anything about my own projects in the Boston Globe when I was writing a column for them. However, what I did was convince the Globe to let me start a blog, and I figured, it's a blog. You can be a little more loosey-goosey, which you actually can't. In general, you're not supposed to. But so I would occasionally there mention some things that I was doing. But basically, you have to, be very clear and upfront with your editors and the people that you're working with about your other projects. And that's one of the reasons I left the Globe is because I was doing all the other things that weren't... I was worried that at some point in time there might be perceived that there could be a conflict of interest, even though there never was, and I didn't want ever to have that come up, so I just left journalism to do my other stuff.
Disclose like a motherfucker. And just be really earnest and authentic when you're talking about that side art thing you're doing, this is my side art thing. I'm excited about it because I'm excited about it. And authenticity gets thrown around way too much in social media marketing as a term. And someone recently, I forget where I saw this, but it was so good. It was like, people who use the word authentic aren't.
Shit.
But if you're being really super honest and real about, I really care about this thing because it's this thing I do. And just let people see why you're passionate about it. And,
I found this to be especially true for me. I mean, the do-it-yourself book tour with the JetBlue pass. I mean, you have to be crazy to do that, right? And at the same time, it really worked.
So we've had a couple of requests for the slides. Are they going to be posted somewhere?
We can discuss afterward about individual slides. The handout will definitely post online, and I had meant to actually post that earlier, and we all will post it on our blogs.
You can, it's at highlowbrow.com today, too.
Okay, so.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This particular deck, I haven't posted anywhere yet, but on slideshare.net/pistachio, you'll see I recycle a lot of my slides. So if you grab any recent deck there, you'll find a lot of them already in there.
And our contact info is on here, so feel free to reach out to us afterward if you...
I'm wicked easy to reach. If you Google the word pistachio, you can't not find me. But if that's not enough, now how much would you pay? Pistachio@hubspot.com is my email address. Email me, I'll email you my slides, whatever.
If your publisher wants to make $1 billion with a book called Shmoozitsu, you know who to talk to.
And if you are a TV exec and you want a really cool food science show, contact me.
And I'm about
not
to
me.
Sprint back to the bookstore over there where exactly nobody's going to buy my book and ask me to sign
Wait,
it.
What time are you on?
4:30.
We're all going over.
Well, I'm there in 5.
Okay, awesome. So follow us all there because like the secret of book signings is like they're really awkward. No one ever buys your book and signs, you know, asks for signatures. But it's the one time at South By I will sit still for half an hour and be able to talk to people.
I
so
can't
just
imagine
count.
You sitting still for half an hour.
I just did it for an hour.
You weren't exactly still. You're like, whoa.
So I'm going to close the panel by saying that everybody's contact information is at the bottom. And as you can see, these are really nice, really approachable people. So if you do have questions you want to follow up, feel free to tweet at the hashtag, at anybody who is here, email. Everybody is accessible. Best of luck with your projects, whatever you are promoting. And a huge round of applause to our panelists.
South by panel, vote. South by panel. I don't know the exact specifics.